here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to, because they're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Now, if you want to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls, because we have with us Dr. Dory Gold. We're going to be talking about his book, Tower of Babel: How the United Nations Has Fueled Global Chaos. How the United Nations Has Fueled Global Chaos. Now, certainly that is a very controversial statement. After all, there are a lot of people who think that the United Nations is the hope of the world. If we could only have a world government, why, everything would be fine. And I would like to suggest that it will be no different than the Tower of Babel. And as we develop our program this afternoon with Dr. Gold, why, I think you will actually come to agree with that. Now, we've had the privilege of interviewing a Dory Gold before. He was a former Israeli ambassador to the United Nations. We still have copies of his book, The Hatred's Kingdom. And of course, it's the story of Saudi Arabia and, of course, this feudal monarchy that has fueled the whole terrorist movement since even before 9/11 and continues after 9/11. President Bush has said, you're either with us or against it, and the people who are financing terrorists are terrorists. And well, that book, Hatred's Kingdom, you need to get. And you need to ask yourself, if the Saudis are financing terrorism and we're protecting the Saudis, then who are the real terrorists? And you'll get awfully confused. But let's get to the book we're talking about right now. It's called The Tower of Babel, and it goes into the history of the United Nations, which, of course, is not part of the solution. It's part of the problem. Dr. Gold, thank you so much for being with us.
It's great to be with you and the listeners.
Well, now, of course, you start out early in the book. You talk about the consistent failures of the United Nations as far as Somalia, when they're slaughtering the people there, and the United Nations forces go in and it's chaos, and then, of course, how they certainly failed in 1994 in Rwanda, and they were part of the problem. UN troops were there, and they weren't allowed to intervene, and 800,000 people were hacked to death. Most of them were Christians. And then, of course, in 1995 in Bosnia, when they were slaughtering the Muslims, and then in Kosovo and Macedonia. And time and again, it seems that the United Nations snatches chaos out of the jaws of victory.
That's absolutely true. And I think one of the reasons I wrote the book is the more I got into it, I saw that I had identified a real theme of why the UN doesn't work. I mean, everybody has a sense. You hear scandal after scandal, oil for food. You also look back at the 1990s, and we all expected that after the end of the Cold War, the defeat of Saddam in Kuwait, that somehow we'd have a period of peace. But in fact, the 1990s were a period of tremendous chaos. And I looked at some of the worst incidents that occurred, and I tied it right into the policy of the UN.
And, of course, the fact that the people within the United Nations were going right along with Saddam Hussein, taking paybacks, but, of course, the French and the others were as well. In fact, I suspect that it even goes into some of our own companies right here in the United States, and nothing was done about it. Saddam was getting away with flaunting all the United Nations sanctions, and nobody wanted to stand up against him because they were all getting money.
Yeah, and I actually have some new information on Saddam Hussein in the book. For example, I go in quite some detail into a biological weapon called aflatoxin, which if anybody is subjected to it will give them liver cancer in 7 years. I found this particular biological weapon to be disturbing because it is connected with some genocidal behavior on the part of Saddam towards his minority groups, the Kurds and the Shiites, who actually are a majority, but nonetheless for him they were a minority group. And the Iraqis, in fact, admitted that they were doing research on aflatoxin to the UN.
Hold that.
Nobody seemed to be disturbed by this.
Hold that for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Dory Gold, former Israeli ambassador to the United Nations, and we're going to be talking today about his book, The Tower of Babel, How the United Nations Has Fueled Global Chaos. And Dr. Gold was just talking about some of the biological warfare agents that Saddam Hussein was working on. They were going to be used just simply for genocidal to remove certain parts of the population he didn't like. And, of course, the aflatoxin would actually create liver cancer, not immediately, but 7 years down the line. So there's no question at all he was certainly a wicked and evil individual. And yet, of course, in many respects, the United Nations, although passing sanctions against him, why key people in the United Nations and the United Nations countries, and many of them even on the Security Council, were actually under the table dealing with Saddam. Isn't that right?
That's correct. In fact, if I had to identify the central flaw in the UN, what's the Achilles heel? I came to the conclusion that the UN is unable to distinguish between good and evil, very simply. You know, when President Roosevelt thought of the idea of the UN, he wanted to have a group of countries that would nip aggression in the bud. That's his term. And in order to nip aggression in the bud and prevent a replay of World War II, you've got to be able to figure out who is the aggressor and distinguish the aggressor from the victim. But the UN constantly reversed this. And they would either say, well, everybody's the same, and they'd engage in moral equivalence, or they make matters worse and blame the victim instead of the aggressor. And this kind of moral blindness, this broken moral compass, is what is at the heart of the UN failure. Because if you get involved in an international crisis and you start blaming the victim and you do nothing about the aggression, you just make aggression worse. You prolong it. And in fact, when the UN got involved in Bosnia and did nothing about the Serb violence against the Bosnian Muslims, what ended up happening is they prolonged the conflict, and only when NATO came in did they bring it to an end by actually taking sides and saying, you on the Serb side have gone too far. So, again, the UN just doesn't work when it comes to issues of international peace and security, and that's what Tower of Babel shows.
And, the thing that really bothered me at the story was that there were about 7,000 men and boys who went to the United Nations for protection so they wouldn't be slaughtered by the Serbs.
Yeah, the whole thing was a UN safe haven. This is the town of Srebrenica in Bosnia. A safe haven. You know, when the French general put up a flag in Srebrenica, put up the UN flag, he says, I will protect you. You can come to us. And thousands of Bosnian Muslims came out of the woods and came to this town to seek protection under the flag of the UN. And when the Bosnian, Serbs...
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Dory Gold, and we're talking about his most recent book, The Tower of Babel. And, of course, he's pointing out that there was this town, it was in Bosnia, and the United Nations were there, and they hauled up the United Nations flag. The French general said, come here, you'll be safe here, and so the Muslims came. The figure is usually used something like 7,000, maybe there were more, but, of course, there are men and boys, and they came there for safety because they were being hunted down and slaughtered. What he effectively did was round them all up, and then when the Serbians came in to slaughter them, the United Nations just refused to do anything, and they were all killed. How could you justify that? And that's not sometime thousands of years ago. What was this, 1995 or so?
This was in 1995. The Dutch peacekeepers in that town ran away. They went to Zagreb, which is in Croatia, and there they had a big beer party with the Crown Prince of the Netherlands. They were dancing to Glenn Miller songs and dancing the chorus line. That's what they were doing while their ankles were knee-deep, while their ankles were deep in beer. The poor Bosnian Muslims were knee-deep in blood. And that's the kind of events that occurred in the 1990s. People aren't aware of it. They don't see the whole picture.
But they don't understand that it was in 1994 in Rwanda, and the United Nations forces were there and under Canadian control, and the Canadian general pleaded with Kofi Annan, who at that time, of course, was in charge of the military, the United Nations, for permission to intervene to stop the slaughter, and Kofi Annan refused and ordered him not to intervene. and 800,000 people perished. And as you pointed out in your book, it wasn't the United Nations that stopped it. It was when, of course, the Tutsis organized their own army and came in and stopped the slaughter, that the slaughter stopped. In fact, since the United Nations has been in force, why, we've had more terrible, terrible wars than, continual wars. And you go into what happened in the Congo. Would you like to describe that? The average American doesn't even like to think about what's going on in the Congo.
Well, you know, what happens is when you fail to deal with a crisis adequately, the crisis brews and eventually spills over into neighboring countries. So what happened in Rwanda was because the UN mishandled Rwanda, the genocidal murderers, the Hutu power guys who had conducted the genocide, eventually ran into Zaire, which later became the Congo, and sought a protective cover there. They set up refugee camps where they sought refuge. And eventually, this led to a huge African war, where about five countries invaded the Congo, were drawn into this huge Hutu-Tutsi conflict, and in the end, by about 2000-2001, 2.5 million people were killed.
2.5 million people. I mean, we don't talk about that here.
We don't talk about that.
Because that makes us feel uncomfortable.
Sure, but I feel a moral obligation to discuss this, to reveal it. And, you know, it's all part of this dysfunctional UN when it comes to peace and security. I mean, now, you know, Prime Minister Blair is sitting with President Bush, and he wants to convince him to get involved in the Middle East negotiations now that Arafat's gone. Well, if somebody says put the UN in, you know, that's just a recipe for disaster, and that's what I'm trying to warn people about.
Well, I think, of course, the worst thing that ever happened to Israel was, of course, the Oslo Peace Accord, which was probably not the United Nations as much as it was America, where we forced...
But it's linked to the UN, because who was the one who legitimized Yasser Arafat? Yasser Arafat was a guy who was ordering airplane hijackings. He had murdered the American ambassador to the Sudan on his order in 1973. He'd been involved in an attack on the Olympics in 1972 in Munich, and this Yasser Arafat was invited by the UN to address the General Assembly in 1974, fresh after those attacks. And, in fact, Yasser Arafat makes a very interesting statement in his UN address. He says, if this was the original UN, meaning the UN of Franklin Roosevelt, I wouldn't have been invited here. But this is a new UN, and this is a place that, you know, obviously showed him hospitality. Well, once he was legitimized, the UN began passing resolutions telling Israel to deal with the PLO. And after 20 years, Israel finally did. It was a huge mistake. You're right. Oslo was a disaster. But part of pushing Israel in that direction were endless UN resolutions that were hostile to the state of Israel.
And, of course, you pointed out, of course, that Idi Amin, who was a butcher and a cannibal, when he appears before the United Nations, he gets a standing ovation.
Well, these are the guys they love. They love Arafat. They love Idi Amin. They love Fidel Castro.
Don't forget
Robert Mugabe.
Right. And of course, they get standing ovations when they go there. In fact, the President of the United States went there about 2 months ago, and he got very, very limited, very polite applause. But these other people, I mean, you've got dictatorships. You've got the same representation in the United Nations for the islands of the Tonga that you have for the United Nations. They got, maybe 30 or 40,000 people there, and they have one vote, and we've got, close to 300 million, and we get one vote, too. That's democracy.
It doesn't make
sense.
But it's even worse than that, because at least the representatives of the United States come from a democratically elected government. The people who come from a lot of these Afro-Asian countries that are authoritarian, those representatives don't come from democratic governments. Who pick these people? Who do they represent? And therefore, you have this illusion of democracy because you have a number of countries sitting together in the General Assembly, but it's not really a democratic process. In fact, they try and pass resolutions that protect them from human rights violations, from intervention in their internal affairs, and they manage to treat their own people horribly as a result, and without any UN criticism. I mean, it took months before anybody paid attention to what was going on in the Sudan with this Darfur area. And I point that out also in Tower of Babel.
And of course, it's really right up to date in the things that are going on today. And the great tragedy is there are people within our country, many of them, and many of our young students have been indoctrinated to school, believe if we would only turn our government, the reins of our government over the United Nations, so they could tell us what to do. And even some of our Supreme Court officials, judges, want, of course, to use the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights as a prototype for what it should be here. And yet, it's totally incompatible with the American Declaration of Independence, because we, unique from any other nation, look to God as the source of our freedom. That's what it says in the Declaration of Independence. It doesn't say anything of that. The United Nations Declaration of Human Rights. That's all. You can have all these rights as long as the government says you can have them.
Right. Well, I think you're right. One of the things I do speak about in my book, I have a whole chapter on the International Criminal Court,
right,
which is an effort to provide jurisdiction to a UN body that actually goes against the U.S. Constitution. I mean, right now, American citizens are protected by the U.S. Constitution.
Well, we won't
but
be
this
much
would
longer.
Be an exception. This would be an exception if you create the International Criminal Court and the U.S. signs onto it. So, luckily, President Bush unsigned the UN to the Criminal Court, but it is a body that threatens the national sovereignty of member countries of the UN.
Well, I certainly, reading through your book, I couldn't help but agree with just about everything you said. The United Nations is not the solution to any of our problems. The United Nations is the source of many of our problems and has blood on its hands at every turn for failure to intervene when terrible atrocities were taking place. And it wasn't necessarily, well, we would have to send in troops. The troops were actually there. They just pulled them out. That is what's so unconscionable.
Yes, I think that's something I want people to be aware of. I think I really want also people to be aware when they read Tower of Babel. People want to understand why is it the world seems so chaotic today. And, you can't blame everything on the UN, but certainly when you read Tower of Babel, you'll suddenly understand a lot of the main crises that we're facing today and how the UN is tied to them.
And, of course, I know that you're writing, of course, a Jewish citizen, and, of course, you point out the total, really, the way that the United Nations has handled Israel, always in an adversarial position. I mean, the Palestinians can, of course, slaughter all the Jews that they want to, and then when the Jews retaliate, why, Kamesh, that's just terrible. You talk about what happened to Jenin. Do you want to talk about that? Because, I mean, this is really so significant. Talk about one-sided bigotry. I mean, that you would think these people would be embarrassed to have anybody ever see what they've done.
Well, Jenin was a very special case. The Palestinians themselves called it the capital of the suicide bombers. It's a Palestinian city. We turned it over to the Palestinians so they could rule themselves, so they wouldn't be under occupation, as they claim. Well, they turned this into the capital of suicide bombers. There were factories for producing explosive materials. There were dozens of what we call insurgents today in Fallujah, dozens of terrorists, and we sent our army in. Now, normally, when you deal in counterinsurgency warfare, most armies in the world will use air power. They'll use F-16s. They'll use flamethrowers. They'll use artillery to take positions, even in an urban built-up situation. Israel did not send in any of that.
Well, that's what we're doing in Fallujah today. I mean, we're using air power, we're using artillery.
No, but you're also exposing your Marines to a lot of hostile fire, so you don't kill innocent Iraqis.
Right.
We do the same thing. We have the same values as the United States does. But, when we went in there, the Palestinian spokesman, like Saeb Arafat, went on CNN and said, the Israelis committed a massacre here. They killed 500 people. There are mass burials going on. And the UN officials all bought into the Palestinian line. Kofi Annan wanted to send a commission of inquiry. On the basis of what? On the basis of some substantiated evidence? No. On the basis of CNN television reports. Well, when all the smoke cleared, it turned out that 500 Palestinians didn't die, but rather close to 55 or 56 Palestinians. And the vast majority carried weapons and were actually terrorists who were engaged in terrorist warfare against Israel.
But of course, I think that the reason was, why did you go to Jenin? And that was because there had been a ceasefire and the Palestinians set suicide bombers in. What was it, Netanya, that they went into the hotel? And
that's right. It was the Park Hotel Netanya. We had people celebrating Passover at a Passover Seder. And a suicide bomber walked in there and murdered over 20 people.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment here with Dr. Dora Gold, and we'll be talking about his book, The Tower of Babel. And I really believe that's what the United Nations is, a prototype of that ancient and, of course, very evil city. And that evil persists to this very day.
Have you ever wondered what really happened at Waco? Have you ever wondered if maybe the government was not giving you the full story? Well, there is the most amazing video. It's called Waco, The Rules of Engagement, 2.5 ripping hours of the story of a government onslaught under a group of peaceable people. Now, their religion may be different than yours and mine, but they were still Christians, they still believed in the Bible, and they believed that the government would one day become their enemy and destroy them. Well, Waco, The Rules of Engagement is a video that everybody who loves freedom should see, because the ultimate conclusion is the government did not want them to come out. The government did everything they could to keep them from coming out, to antagonize them, loud music, lights all the time, to totally create a situation where they could not think clearly or respond normally. Waco, The Rules of Engagement is currently unavailable through regular sources. Call 1-800-5-HIB-WAR right now.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine. But those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinix is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like a corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tierney. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done, get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Dr. Dora, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Right after the, certainly after, as a result of the Oslo Accord and the negotiations went on, and the Arafat refused to actually agree to that because he didn't get everything he wanted. But didn't the Israelis give up something like 95% of their land? What percentage of the land they held did they give up with a promise that they would get peace?
Well, it was Prime Minister Ehud Barak, who was elected as a tough-line laborite, sort of like Yitzhak Rabin. And he tested Arafat and basically said, look, if I'm willing to give up somewhere in the vicinity of above 90%, it could have been 92, it could have been 95, but let's say above 90% of the Judea and Samaria and all of the Gaza Strip, will you drop all your claims and make peace? And Arafat said no. It's now become clear to us what Yasser Arafat really wanted. He didn't want a Palestinian state alongside Israel. He wanted a Palestinian state instead of Israel. And in his view, he thought he could obtain Israel, the Gaza Strip, Judea and Samaria, the West Bank, and all of the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. He wanted the whole land from the Mediterranean to the Iraqi desert. That was his goal. And we're very lucky that he passed away without even going near achieving that goal.
Well, of course, but the Israelis ceded so much of their land. You gave up most of your land, you know, without getting any promise of peace. That was just so incredible.
Well, it was an offer. Israel didn't give up anything in the end because he didn't agree to the offer. But there is a problem. Many people feel, well, you put that offer on the table, it's still on the table. And that offer is off the table. Prime Minister Sharon is determined to keep Jerusalem united under the sovereignty of Israel. We will not allow Palestinian Tanzim bands to take over the holy sites of Christianity, Judaism, and even Islam. And we will withdraw from some of the territory. But they will withdraw, as it says in Resolution 242, to secure recognized boundaries, meaning defensible borders.
But if you lost the defensible border of the Jordan River, you pulled all the way back in places you're only maybe eight miles from the Mediterranean.
Well, no, we have not pulled back. Our army is everywhere from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean today.
Well,
we're not always in all the cities because we it's better not to stay in there. It's better to just move in if you have to on the basis of intelligence. But we are sitting in the Jordan Valley today. If we weren't sitting in the Jordan Valley, and people like Abu Musab al-Zarqawi in Fallujah would be sending suicide bombers across the Jordan Valley into Israeli cities.
But what is your wall there? What is the barrier wall that you're putting up now that many places...
Well, that wall is what I would call a last line of defense. That is not our future border. That is right now we have a situation where we have Palestinian population centers in cities like Qalqilya or Tulkarm. And a Palestinian youth who's a member of Hamas could put dynamite on his body and walk across a field into an Israeli mall or to where Israeli teenagers are playing bowling or whatever. And so we had to put an end to that. So we put up this fence to make sure that they couldn't just walk across and easily attack. If they go up to the fence and they touch the fence, it'll send an electronic signal to the Israeli army and we'll have units there within 15 minutes to stop them.
All right, fine. So, but of course, you pretty well pulled an awful lot of your people out of the area on the other side of the fence, haven't you?
No, we haven't pulled a single person.
You haven't pulled anybody out? What about what's happening in Gaza today?
Well, in Gaza, the Prime Minister Sharon is planning a full withdrawal. And he's basically saying to the Palestinians, okay, here, this area is not that vital to all of us. That's not land that we think we want to be in 20 years. So we'll give it to you now. We'll pull everything out. Let's see you make a stable democracy. Let's see you show that you'll fight terrorism.
But
if
they're not,
they don't, they won't get anything else.
But they're not fighting terrorism, and they're fostering terrorism.
They're fostering terrorism. Well, under Arafat was the mastermind, the architect of terrorism. So now let's see what they do. And I think our society will be stronger and more cohesive defending what it believes is vital in Judea and Samaria, rather than trying to struggle over every square inch of the Gaza Strip.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two with our guest, Dr. Dory Gold. And if you'd like to give him a call, Dory Gold, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295.
help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaur's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaur's book, Ear to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaur will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaur.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at the Radio Liberty, and of course this is the time when we want to mention that we've talked to Jim Shepherd, who makes the Big Berkey and the Berkey Life water fillers, and asked him the very simple question. If there were to be some sort of a nuclear incident, a power plant, or some sort of a nuclear attack, would the Big Berkey or the Berkey Light filter the water out? And his answer was yes, it would actually filter the nuclear material, because you can't make water radioactive. What you have is radioactive contamination from dust, and of course that would be taken out. He also said that you would certainly want have to realize that after a certain period of time, your filters would become radioactive, and so you just have to have an extra set. I get rid of the ones that were there after a couple of weeks and then replace them with ones that were not radioactive. You'd have to be worried about radioactivity for about 3 to 4 weeks after an attack. And the Big Berkey, the Berkey Light, will help you, so give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Dr. Dor Gold. Dr. Gold, are you still with the Israeli government now, or are you independent?
I'm independent. I run a think tank, the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs. We have a website, jcpa.org. And I help the government from time to time when they call in, they ask my advice.
All right, fine. Well, of course, you're well aware of what's happening. But your conclusion is the United Nations isn't going to work. It's a wonderful dream, but simply it doesn't recognize evil. That would really be a sort of the same thing that we have here. People don't recognize there really is evil in the world. So you pick up that theory. I think that that idea, because I think that's so vitally important to what you're trying to say.
After the U.S. elections, everyone's talking about the importance of moral values for American society. You need moral values to have an international community that works. If you can't distinguish between a genocidal murderer and the people that are under siege trying to defend themselves, you're never going to be able to make peace in the world. You're just going to spread more chaos, which is why you have such a strong title. Now, you know, the U.N., when it was founded, in order to be a founding member of the U.N., you had to declare war on Germany or Japan, on the Axis powers. And so you had to be an ally of the United States. And most countries then, if they weren't democracies, certainly revered the leadership of Franklin Roosevelt and of Winston Churchill. And therefore, the countries then spoke with a similar language and similar moral values back in 1945. Well, that all changed over the years, and that's why I make the analogy to the Tower of Babel in Chapter 11 of the Book of Genesis. Because once the nations began speaking different languages, they couldn't work together, and they spread all over, and the situation became more chaotic. Of course, they attempted to build a tower to challenge God, which is why God intervenes and actually forces them to leave their project alone. But I see a lot of analogies. The only difference is if you look for the book on Amazon or in your bookstores, I spell it B-A-B-B-L-E and not B-A-B-E-L.
All right, fine. My telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. And this book is really an indictment of the United Nations, and I think it needs to be indicted. Somebody had called in and wanted to get that website again. Could you give it once more slowly?
Which website?
Your website.
Oh, www.J as in Jerusalem, C as in Charlie, P as in Peter, A as in Apple, .org.
That's jcpa.org, okay?
www.
If you didn't get it this time, you'll have to give us a call here at the station to get that. Well, then, what can be done? I mean, here we have a United Nations organization, where, of course, you've got something like 191 members, and, of course, the majority of them, or the vast, certainly a significant number of them, are authoritarian societies. They're not democratically elected. You've got all sorts of tyrants there and who respect the other tyrants of the world, and of course, when you're trying to deal with it from a moral position with people who are immoral, what can you hope to accomplish?
They'll trample all over you.
That's right.
So, my suggestion at the end of Tower of Babel is that if the United States needs to be active in the world, it should organize coalitions of the willing. That's what President Bush did in Iraq. In fact, that's what President Clinton did in Kosovo. You organize those states who are willing to work with you. You try and work with democratic states first and foremost. But just because they're democracies doesn't mean they're going to be your automatic ally. Look at France and Germany. And I think you have to look beyond Europe. And there are some European states who are very loyal allies of the United States and Iraq. I'm talking about Italy. I'm talking about Poland. But you have to also look beyond Europe. And you might find countries like India that are fighting terrorism like the United States, Thailand, Singapore, Japan, and, of course, Israel, Turkey. And try and build a coalition of countries that are both democratic and they have a similar view of the threat, their allies. That would basically replicate the original conditions that Roosevelt and Churchill had when they tried to build the UN. And then what you do is, while dealing with immediate crises outside the UN, you try and take these countries and form a bloc inside the UN and try and get the UN to eventually change. That's a very long-term and difficult project.
Well, do you really think that we will ever have an effective world, a moral world government? My fear is if we have a world government...
world government is not in the cards. Right. I'm against world government. I think every country has to be independent, strong, and sovereign.
Right.
Well, what you have to do is sometimes work together and try and deal with dangerous threats to all of us.
Well, because the one thing about the United Nations, it is always anti-Israel. I mean, the predominant, of the number of people in that organization are anti-Israel. In fact, you've only got a couple of allies in the whole world. Sometimes the only person that votes with you is the United States.
Well, let me tell you, there are a number of peoples in the world who just don't have enough political clout to get attention, to get protected. You know, and the Jewish people are not the only people. Look at the Tibetan Buddhists. Did anybody do anything to help them when the communist Chinese invaded Tibet? I mean, the Dalai Lama comes here and visits and says hello, but, you know, nobody's going to do anything to defend the Tibetan Buddhists. Or look in Darfur in Sudan. In that case, you have a Muslim population, but they're blacks. And they're being attacked by Janjaweed Arab militias. Now, some, including the U.S. Department of State, have called that genocide. But nobody is really rolling up their sleeves the way they should to defend those people. So there are a lot of people out there, peoples out there, that can't be fully defended, that don't have enough political clout to mobilize a group of countries to on their behalf. And unfortunately, Israel has been in that position since its creation. We are lucky to have our great American ally who helps us in the Security Council with a veto. But in the General Assembly, where it's one country, one vote, and everybody's got the same vote, we're open to coalition attacks of groups of countries that despise us. Maybe they think that they're going to get oil money if they vote against us.
Well, of course, the other thing is, my concern is that some of these crazy plans that they have for the United Nations is they want to rotate people off of the Security Council. And of course, if the United Nations has ever gotten off of the Security Council, why, of course, they will lose so much of their clout. And then, of course, we have these committees on human rights with great people on it, like, well, you know, Gaddafi, and I think they're even going to put Syria onto the Security Council. I mean, here's
it was on the Security Council. It was an Orwellian moment.
I thought the same thing. You know, how could you possibly put this terrorist country that's been supporting terrorism onto the Security Council?
If you read the UN Charter, the Security Council is supposed to protect international peace and security. So if you're sitting on the Security Council, your job is to make sure that the world's peace and security is defended. But if you have one of the greatest sponsors of international terrorism sitting on the Security Council at the same time, how is it going to protect international peace and security when it's undermining it at the same time? That's what the UN does, and it's a ridiculously organized body right now, unless it's fundamentally reformed. So I say bypass the UN, go around the UN, or while, if you have to, in the meantime, try and figure out a way to reform it.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is I was reading your book, and I was thinking, of course, Israel's claim to the land there, and because we
put in the book.
Right, we share, though, your love for Israel, but, you know, the basis of the Jewish claim to is not the United Nations, but it's really the Bible. And Christians believe in the Bible, and Jews believe in the Bible, but the rest of the people in the world, and most of the governments, don't believe in the Bible, and as a result, that is why, really, I think that there are so anti-Israel. You know, they think they have no claim to the land, and of course you rest your claim really on the Bible itself.
Well, that's true. I think one of the problems we have faced is that when socialist parties took over in Europe, you know, they have no connection with religion, and they have a hard time dealing with our claim. Now, when Israel was ruled by socialist parties, they said to themselves, well, at least they're socialists like us, like the Israeli Labor Party. But when non-socialist parties came into power, like you have today, the Likud and other parties, they say, well, wait a minute, what do we have in common with these people? You know, if they're basing their claim on the Bible, why should we support them? And I think you identified something. The more secularized countries are some of the most anti-Israel countries.
Well, I'm very, very concerned, not only about Israel, but the whole of the Middle East. I just see sort of a boiling cauldron over there, and I don't know where we're going. You obviously live there. You have strong ties. What's going to happen in the Middle East, do you think?
Well, I think you got two separate issues occurring. You have a wave, I would call it an evil wind, that's affected the radical Muslims in the Middle East, particularly those who come from the Muslim Brotherhood and those who come from Wahhabi Islam, and they are seeking the destruction of Western civilization. That has absolutely nothing to do with Israel. The Muslim Brotherhood was established in 1928 before Israel existed, and the Wahhabi Islam began in about 1744, even before the United States existed. These are internal developments in the Middle East. They are backed by big petrodollars, and they gave rise to Al-Qaeda and the global terrorism that we're now facing. Now, to get rid of that threat is going to take a very long time, and it requires eventually spreading democracy in the Middle East, accountable government, and I think that's what President Bush has in mind, starting with Iraq. Now, with respect to Israel, I think that you can't really get an Israeli-Palestinian peace until you deal with some of the larger issues in the region. You can't have an Israeli-Palestinian peace if the Saudis are pumping money into radical groups who want to undermine peace. You can't have a stable peace if the Iranians are moving money through Hezbollah into Hamas and into other groups. So we've got to deal with some of the larger extremist movements in the Middle East that not only threaten Israel, but they threaten the United States and some of your European allies. And then, eventually, we can begin building a stable peace in the region.
And I really think that one of the biggest problems in the Middle East is Saudi Arabia, and nobody wants to say anything because they've got all the oil dollars and they've got all the oil. And that's why I really believe that everybody out in the audience needs to read Dr. Dory Gold's previous book, Hatred's Kingdom, which we still have copies of. Why is that important? Because the Saudis are really, of course, the The skunk at the garden party, they're the ones who are actually funding so much of this Islamic terrorist movement. Now, we're told, oh, well, since they had some attacks there while they're cracking down on terrorism, well, of course, then where is all the money coming from that's continuing to fund it? That's what they're telling the American people. But I really believe, of course, they're not only funding of what's going on in the Middle East, they're funding the radical Islamic movement right here in the United States. And we have 80% of our mosques here in the United States are rabid Wahhabi mosques. They're certainly funding the radical movement in Nigeria today, and we're beginning to see the fruits of that as they're beginning talking about, you know, strikes and closing down oil flows. And that's all aimed at America. People have to understand that this is all aimed at, of course, undermining the social fabric of America, which is so dependent on the oil coming from Nigeria. I mean, they're funding the radical Islamic movement. I'm talking about the radical Islamic movement in the Philippines, and that money's coming from our money, isn't it, really, that we're giving them?
Well, you pay for oil, somebody takes the oil profits and spends it. They spend it on these charities, which go around the world and support radical, militant Islamic groups. You're right. It's very, very dangerous.
And I think you really need to get the book, Hatred's Kingdom.
There's a paperback version, which is updated, by the way. And in there, I have the story of even after they had those bombings in Riyadh inside Saudi Arabia, the Saudis began making a distinction. They said, well, we're against the terrorism inside Saudi Arabia, but we support the jihad outside Saudi Arabia. So they're still sending volunteers into Iraq.
And I think, of course, that as President Bush said, those are people who finance terrorism are terrorists. But, of course, we don't seem to do anything about it. Well, let's go to Robert, who's calling from Illinois. Hi, Robert. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I wanted to ask Dr. Gold his opinion, if he thought, what he thought about the Barcelona process and the Greater Middle East Initiative as far as merging the Middle Eastern countries into like a free trade zone pattern after the EU.
Well, I think the Barcelona process is actually a very good idea if you do it seriously. In other words, the idea is to create a model. Actually, it's modeled on the Helsinki process, Conference for Security and Cooperation in Europe. What you do is you force the Middle Eastern countries to meet on a regular basis. You force their foreign ministers to sit with each other, have lunch with each other, talk to each other. If you don't have communications in the Middle East, you get conspiracy theories and people start acting in radical ways. So I think forcing a kind of institutionalized connection is a good idea because basically what you get are more and more meetings. Now, you shouldn't think that's going to create instant peace, but it's an important step, so I tend to be supportive of it.
Okay, Robert, of course, but that's the problem they're trying to do here in the Western Hemisphere. They want to destroy our sovereignty and merge us with the rest of the
country. No, I'm not talking about destroying sovereignty.
Oh, I know.
I'm talking about meetings.
Oh, right.
Meetings. No, sovereignty stays.
Okay. Well, of course, there's such an effort to do to the Western Hemisphere what they're doing to Europe. Anything else, Robert?
Well, would the Barcelona process or the Greater Middle East include like a regional WTO type arrangement for a supranational,
trade? Middle Eastern countries don't trade with each other. So you have to take into account the realities of the Middle East. They all trade outside to other countries. And so I don't know whether the WTO models exactly apply in this case. I think what's important in any Barcelona process is, and this is hinted at in my book, Tower of Babel, is that you have to have a code of conduct for countries. You have to say, you want to be part of this process, you want to benefit from this process, well, here are 10 commandments you have to follow as a country. Commandment 1, do not harbor terrorist groups. And what you have to do is use the power of the European Union, the economic power, to say to a country like Syria, you don't get any special privileges, you get no special access until you uproot terrorism in your midst. And if you really do that, and the Europeans are serious about it, they could really effect an important change in the Middle East.
Are they really serious about it?
No.
All right, let's go. Thanks so much, Robert. Yes. Appreciate your calling. Let's go to Ian calling from New York. Hi, Ian. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing fine. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes. I heard that Bill Clinton is going to be running with something with the UN.
Well, there's some people who say he would like to become the next Secretary General. Have you heard anything about that, Dr. Gold?
Yeah, I mean, the rumor is out there. Maybe you should read my book first.
All right. I think Bill Clinton would feel real good with the United Nations. And what we ought to do is put him there and then completely ignore the organization.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Anything else, Ian?
That's all. Thank you.
God bless. Thanks so much for calling. Okay, fine. Well, we're just about out of time. It's always a fascinating hour that we spend with you. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners? We got about a minute and a half before we have to let you go.
I just want to reiterate a point I made before. Just as you're talking about that you need moral values to create an American society that's moving forward, that's doing the right thing, that is living according to moral standards, you need that in international society. And the problem is everyone compromises that. The UN has done it the most. You must be able to distinguish between good and evil, between aggressors and defenders, between those who want to slaughter people and those victims who want to just stay alive. The UN doesn't make those moral distinctions, and that is the Achilles heel of that organization.
Well, of course, the recurrent theme of our program is we're involved in a spiritual battle, not only here, but throughout the world. Would you say that would be a fair assessment?
Yes, I think so, but I'm trying to give you an international focus.
Right.
If you take that same concern and apply it globally, you'll see that that is the real failure of the United Nations organization.
And
it doesn't make moral distinctions, and therefore it leads to more chaos, it leads to more disaster, and it leads to more crises in the world.
And that's a recurrent theme of this book, which I certainly concur with. Thank you so very much. It's been a real pleasure, Dr. Gold.
Great being with you.
Bye-bye. Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, The Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, The Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just mention that we do carry the Sanzian shortwave radio, it's a 505, and of course it's AM/FM. It's got all those things you want to, complete with a 25-foot aerial and a carrying case, and we think it's the top of the line, you know, and of course it's great to have for an emergency. It's great to have to listen to Radio Liberty on shortwave. And Sanzian's been making shortwave radios for 30 or 40 years. They certainly have been one of the best. Really, they made most of the shortwave radios in the world up until recently. And of course, they're still a major producer. There are other people who come in and compete. We like to think they haven't done quite such a good job. Then we carry, of course, the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum. And this allows you to homeschool your children from grammar school all the way through high school graduation for $199.95. That's $199.95, not a year, but for the whole program. It's on 22 CDs. Everything is there that you need, the textbooks, the reading books, Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn, the lesson plans, the answer to the questions, everything that you need to homeschool your children. The only thing you have to buy are the Saxon math textbooks. That's the Saxon math textbooks, and you get those at a reduced price from Dr. Robinson's ministry. So give us a call of 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum, the Sanzian radio, or, of course, if you'd like to get Miracle 2 products, or if you'd like to, of course, get the Big Berkey or the Berkey Light, which we carry, and they really will take out the nuclear contamination. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and of course our guest today has been Dr. Dory Golden, and we feel that his book, Hatred's Kingdom, is an excellent, excellent book, because you'll understand that Saudi Arabia Which, of course, is being backed by our government. Everything's being done to expose the fact that they are one of the major sources of financing terrorism throughout the world. Why aren't we doing anything to stop it and to cut it off? Or you're being told, that, of course, now that they've come to attack themselves, they're doing something. And as Dr. Gold just told you, and he lives over in Israel, they're not doing anything they can to stop financing terrorism outside of Saudi Arabia. They're financing it in Nigeria, throughout Africa, throughout Southeast Asia, and all throughout the Middle East, and right here in the United States. And why are we allowing it to happen? Certainly not in the name of preserving freedom. No, we're going to restrict the freedom of the American people and allow the Saudis to continue preaching their hatred here. You need to understand the Islamic religion. We have a wonderful four-tape set. It's called Islam, the Religion of Doom. And it's four interviews with Craig Wynn, who's been threatened. He gets a couple of hundred threats a week from the Muslims throughout the world because he wrote a book called Prophet of Doom. And, of course, he's the story of Muhammad. This is a satanic religion. And, of course, Muhammad was demonically possessed. You need to get the information. You need to understand the average Muslim is a good person out there. They really have never read the Sirah. They've never read the Quran or read it carefully and read the various other publications, which are the basis of the Muslim faith. Muhammad feared he was satanically possessed. You need to get our four-tape set, Islam, the Religion of Doom. You need to get Craig Wynn's excellent book, Prophet of Doom. It is 1,000 pages, but, you know, it's you can read 200 pages of the appendices where he's got everything cataloged, and you'll know more than most imams, of course, throughout the world. Of course, these imams are preaching hatred of America. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will want to get that book, Inside the Red Zone, because it's so important that you understand what to do in case of a nuclear attack. And one of the things we can tell you is that the Big Berkey and the Berkey Light products, which we do carry, will actually take out the nuclear contamination. And, of course, you're going to have to know what to do, and we'll tell you about that if you give us a call, because, of course, you do not want to handle those filters because they become radioactive, but the water that you'll be drinking will be clear. So you need either the Big Berkey or the Berkey Light. You need to get these items and have them on hand. And, of course, the beauty of the book, Dr. Igor Shafid's book, Inside the Red Zone, is the fact that it tells you exactly what to do and to start thinking about now and how you can begin to prepare yourself for the very frightening times that lie ahead. Again, everything is listed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, what you need to do, what you need to think about. Get yourself a suitcase packed and hope that you never have to use it. But if you have to use it, believe me, there's not going to be any place to go in the way of stores to get that material. And you may have to just stay right where you are, but at least you'll have all that material and have it ready. And it's all listed in this great book, Inside the Red Zone, which we recommend every one of our listeners and supporters get. And remember, all of the items are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you want to really get some excellent books on the spiritual aspect of this, the book The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kahn, New World Religions by Gary Kahn, and of course, Brotherhood of Darkness by Stanley Monteith, will give you insight into this truly demonic movement that is afoot in the world today, intent upon destroying Western civilization. So we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders. Please remember to pray for my ministry of Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're on the front lines of this battle. Until tomorrow, when we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, goodbye. May the Lord be with you.